The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
Longhorn is going to be built, I mean, automatically is going to be faster.
Yeah.
Just based on, because it's based on newer code.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hopefully going to continue to be refined, maybe even see, you know, even faster code than what it is today.
Well, you should see experience be a lot faster, especially now that you're not rendering the desktop in memory and software.
Yeah.
It's all being offloaded to the GPU, and lots of people are running, you know, NVIDIA.
Yeah,
and
all these high-end cards, and you really can't do anything with at this point.
You do.
Other than game.
Yeah, you can game great, but I mean, if you've got a, you know, GeForce 6800... and all you're doing is surfing the web and checking your email, your processor, your graphics processor is bored with nothing to do.
Yeah.
So I really think that you're going to start seeing some great, great software around the fact that now you have 3D on the desktop. You have items that render completely differently. Your memory is immediately going to be faster because part of it doesn't have to be dedicated to what needs to be drawn on the screen right now.
So wait, how much, let's say if we're doing a theoretical comparison,
mm-hmm.
You know, when I boot up Windows, all of a sudden half my memory is like gone.
Right.
It's just sucked away.
Right.
Gone. Is that going to get better?
Yes.
In what way? And I mean, are we talking like a big difference? Are we talking just a couple megabytes?
Well, I can't say for certain. I don't think anybody
and
can
I'm
really
just,
say for
obviously,
certain.
Obviously, and I'm just asking for, you know, just a general...
I would think...
Speculatively.
I would think that you would see a big difference. Not only that, Microsoft's working on tuning what really needs to be enabled on startup. They're working on instant on, and I know they talked about that with... The only real way you get that is with the Pocket PC. But they're looking at how do we get the start time down to within 2 seconds? How do we get it so where when you suspend or when you hibernate, that information comes back up right away? Where as the hibernation process is saving your information to the disk, how can we set aside what absolutely needs to be loaded when the computer comes on again, and how much can be loaded after you've been on for 3 or 4 seconds? They're looking at, you know, all those processes to try to make the PC more like an appliance. The problem that you're going to have is that the PR people are going to get a hold of Longhorn when it's close to being done, and they're going to tout it as this huge thing. Like, for example, with Windows XP, they called Windows XP Windows Experience. Well, you pointed out very succinctly in your blog that the experience people are having with it in many cases isn't great. And they haven't done a really good job of talking about why you want to use Windows XP, what makes an experience great. They haven't taken a page out of Apple's playbook in that respect. And so I worry about what happens to people's – you think people's expectations are messed up now. I worry about their expectations a year and a half from now when it's being marketed. And maybe it's not up to snuff, or maybe the PR people try to pump it up to be bigger than it really is. The software, Windows is always going to improve in one way or another. And so how do you set the expectation that this is what we're doing right now? This is, you know, we've actually put thought into giving you a better experience and not just, you know, we're listening to certain focus group people. How do you move beyond that into making people look forward to the next version with joy and not relish or not hatred? People are, I think, looking for Longhorn and looking to IE7 as finally I don't have to deal with all this garbage. And
see, that worries me too. In seeing what I've seen with IE7, I think it's going to be a fantastic upgrade for IE6 users, but I think for everybody else, I don't think they're going to come back. I mean, once you've left IE,
right?
You found something that fits your needs,
right?
And you know, I've obviously floated to Max. Then, you know, how many millions of users have floated to Firefox?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just going to continue to happen.
Once
you leave IE,
I gotta say, a lot of people put a lot of valor.
Gravitas,
thank you, on the browser. In my opinion, we're hitting about the end of what you can really do with the web browser paradigm as we see it now.
I disagree. I didn't think I could do half as many things as I'm now doing in Max.
Well,
I stuck with IE for years.
Well, even with, I mean, being able to do those things, that's great. And that makes it productive, and it has plugins, and that's great. I'm talking a paradigm beyond an HTML, beyond the current web browsing experience. I'm talking about some of the things you'd be able to see with Avalon and being able to browse to a website and having it look like a Windows application in front of you without having to worry about postbacks and without having to worry about fetching information from the server and waiting for the page to refresh itself and those kind of things. I'm talking about having the internet experience be seamless, whether you're connected or not connected. With Avalon, there's potential, for example, to be able to have, I'm going to try to make this example as simple as possible, but to be able to have a mobile device that is queued into a location-based web service where, say, you're walking in front of Starbucks with a smartphone or a pocket PC. Your Wi-Fi or your GPS built in could know that you were next to a Starbucks, could automatically call a web service that's standard for any location, download the user interface, and not just a web page, I mean a full-fledged application that the pocket PC could display to be able to order a drink from Starbucks, from outside of Starbucks, without ever having to go inside.
Oh gosh, that's a spyware writer's dream come true.
It has the potential to be, if you weren't careful, if you didn't have security checks.
Yeah, but that's, for me and you, that's fine. But mm-hmm. for, you know, your girlfriend or my fiance, that's not fine.
Well, I mean, there's security protocols that you could put in place, too. I mean, you could completely shut that off, or you could say, I only want to see this from Starbucks. And Starbucks would have to have a certificate that you'd have to validate and say, okay, this really is Starbucks. Here, download this UI. I mean, there's things that could be in place. What I'm saying is there's a completely different browsing paradigm that is waiting for people to take advantage of it. And it goes beyond clicking hyperlinks in a browser. The web has evolved over the past, 10, 15 years from whatever happened with DARPANET into where it is today. There's new protocols that are created and new experiences around it and new formats like RSS and whatever that come into play. But to think that, you know, we're going to see an IE25 that delivers the same experience, but, you know, tabbed browsing trees or, you know, whatever, that's not going to happen. There's going to be something else that comes up within the next 5 years that's going to take the place of a web browser. You already see it to a degree with RSS, and really RSS is only the beginning in terms of being able to deliver information in a way that it comes to you, PubSub and things like, not necessarily just PubSub.com, but, you know, being able to subscribe to information that maybe learns from you and that learns from your browsing experiences and is tailored to give you new browsing experiences with some AI code or something of that nature. I mean, we really are looking at a future that could be extremely different from what you see right now. And I think IE7 is going to be a great upgrade. I think that it's going to be an about damn time upgrade. And I think that Microsoft was stupid forever putting IE or locking IE into the Windows development track. They did a great job when it was a product. They took over 95% market share and they got complacent. They got almost bored. And so because they killed everybody, there wasn't anybody to compete with and there was no reason to improve the browser. Well, I think Firefox and all that is great for IE because it forces Microsoft to have to compete again. And Microsoft works best when they're actually being competitive.
Do you think that's why, we've had, you know, I mean, part of the reason why we've had to wait such a long time for a new operating system, I mean, a true, real new operating system like Longhorn, because there is no competition in the desktop space on the PC. And again, push aside the Linux zealots, and I know that the Linux market exists, and mm-hmm. I know there are plenty of fanatics, and you know I've got a virtual PC of Linux myself, right. But
I can't stand Fanatics. Talk to me about it. And lots of people, I'm going to say that. I'm probably going to get emails calling me a Windows fanatic. I like talking about it in ways that works. Linux is not a serious desktop operating system. It is a hobbyist operating system designed by hobbyists, interacted with hobbyists. That's great. To be able to have Linux be a true competitor to Windows in terms of desktops, in terms of end users, they have years to go before it'll even get close to being an experience that people have come to accept. And I'm sorry, but right now, the only thing that they are doing is playing catch-up with where Windows is. Why does Java Desktop look like Windows? Because, for better or worse, Windows does it best for that market. Are there, like I said, OS X is a great, great operating system. For, it serves the people that use it very well. Apple did a poor job of licensing it. They should have licensed it. They should have made it so where you can install it on other machines. Why you can't run OS X on Windows native on an IBM PC is beyond me. So, but they want that lock-in. They want you locked into every single thing that Apple sells, and that's fine. It works for them. Not on a level that it works for Windows. I think there is a lot of competition in that space because Linux is a threat to them. Linux forces them
in
to
the
compete.
In the enterprise, not necessarily on the desktop.
Well, not on the desktop, but the thing is that there are enterprise desktops out there. And so they look at they don't look at power users on our end, but they look at power users on the enterprise end and see how are businesses going to be interacting with this. They need to do a better job finding out what we need. I don't think that there could be no other operating system on Earth. If Microsoft is not listening to the people who want to throw their screens out the window, they're not doing their job as a business. And they're realizing that. I mean, Microsoft went through a whole series. There's a reason they're called the Borg. They did what they wanted. They assimilated everybody in their path. And they acquired companies left and right to do what they wanted. That bit them big time. They, it took them, it was a hard lesson for them to realize that the customer drives what they do, not whatever they want. If I don't like what you're doing, I'm not going to buy your product. And in creating the monopoly that they did, they needed to learn that lesson. It's going to take years for them to be able to adequately respond to that lesson. I think in the long run, I hope in the long run, that they can do that. But Google's a pretty big upstart. They're doing a lot of work in that space, and they're the underdog. They got everything to gain and nothing to lose. And they're gaining on Microsoft in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but they've yet to really. I mean, they've made a couple acquisitions like Keyhole and Picasa. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking specifically desktop in the desktop space. There's rumors that there's now going to be a Google browser.
Mm-hmm.
How is that a threat? I mean, really, truly, how is that a threat?
I don't.
You want to talk about what's going to accelerate IE development? Google mm-hmm. releasing a browser.
Oh yeah.
No argument. I guarantee that would dwarf. If Google released a browser, even if it was based on Firefox, it would dwarf Firefox downloads. Dwarf.
Oh, yeah. Well, Google is right now what Microsoft was 10 years ago in terms of people. They're the media golden child. Every time, I mean, we saw it today with the Google AdSense, or yesterday with Google AdSense in the feeds. Every time Google does something, it gets covered everywhere.
Yeah.
Microsoft had that.
Just to tell the listeners what had happened, Robert was the first person to be officially sanctioned to run Google AdSense in his RSS feeds, and the first person on the planet, and this got major, major coverage. In fact, I ended up with the article that I wrote that basically kind of seeded everything before you had written up a description. I think when I looked at it before we did the interview, I had 22 trackbacks. And those are just the trackbacks that I you know, that registered, not including all the mentions.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was a major announcement, especially for people like myself who are Google AdSense addicts.
Right. Well, I can't say a whole lot about what we've done yet because it's still in alpha, but I can say that I worked really, really hard to make this happen. And I was really lucky that we were the first ones that were able to get out.
Yeah,
and do
that is very surprising. And, it's so funny though that you're staying at our house like at the time that this happened.
Yeah,
you know, there was like. It was just very strange how that kind of came together.
I was really glad, too, that it worked out at WinHack. I mean, I could have released it next week, and it still would have gotten press.
Yeah.
But all eyes are on what's going on with Longhorn, and all eyes were on our site, and that I was able to, you know, have you see what we were doing after we went live, and to talk about it, you know, that was a big push, and... I'm just glad that all the stars aligned for that to be able to happen.
Yeah, it's pretty weird how that happened.
Yeah.
So Google, obviously, you know, the star child, they can do no wrong.
Right.
You know, what do you think would happen? I mean, how are they really, truly, in terms of, like, Windows or operating system, or even software, they really haven't done anything to be a threat other than search, obviously, in Mindshare. How is it threatening Microsoft beyond MSN?
I cheer Google on and whatever they're going to do because I like Microsoft. And that's a hard thing for some people to understand, but I want Google to force Microsoft to compete.
Oh, I totally agree. I said the same thing about Firefox. I said, you know, yeah. I don't use Firefox. I have it on my system. I use it as an alternative browser if I need to check something, but I stick with something else, but I am all for Firefox if it's going to spur you know, development in other areas.
And I'm for Firefox as a concept, but I can't stand Firefox in terms of execution on the community level because I cannot see how you can have your head so far up your rear end that you're going to say that the browser is the most secure browser on Earth because nobody's tried to hack it yet, because nobody's seen it yet, and that it's not deployed enough for hackers to want to try to attack it.
The tallest nail always gets pounded.
Well, yeah, and so Microsoft's the one that's been pounded for forever on it. But now that Firefox is out there, they already got hit with phishing stuff, and they said, oh, well, it's still secure. Oh, well, it's still secure. Well, it's not as secure as you thought it was. And I love the idea of open source. I love the idea of community of people getting together and on code.
I've got some fantastic open source apps on my computer. Fantastic.
They're great. What I dislike about open source is the idea that the software is in some level better because it's not managed by a corporation or that quote unquote more eyes get to see it. That's not the case. It's just to think that because Microsoft puts out code that, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people don't see it before it goes out would be foolhardy. But at the same time, they like having the power of being able to go in and modify the code when they want to, and that's fine. That's great. It works out well for that specific area. But in terms of Firefox being... I just can't stand zealotry without anything to back it up. That drove me nuts. Now, Firefox and Mozilla and all that's great because the browser wars are heating up again, and it's really going to push people to innovate. That's great. Google's going to force Microsoft to innovate with their mapping stuff. I told you, I've told lots of other people today, Microsoft had TerraServer, Microsoft had MapPoint. Who are they not paying enough to get somebody to put that together? I mean, it really is a no-brainer. Let's map out our directions on something that you can actually tell isn't an orange block of a
Google Maps
neighborhood.
No, Google Maps won me over because, you know, MSN as a brand is just all over the map, literally. I mean, not to use that word.
Right.
It's confusing and it's convoluted. And Google Maps, everything that Google does is so simple and elegant. And you know what? I will tell you this. When Google first hit the scene, I was still using MSN.
Yeah.
I still loved MSN. I loved the MSN experience. I loved it. And, you know, after getting served pop-ups through MSN, that's when I was done. And that's when I went to Google because people were talking about it. I'm like, well, if they're using it. And then, you know, pretty soon, everybody uses Google. In fact, I don't think it's a trade secret. I'd argue that the number one search on MSN.com or search.msn.com is Google or www.google.com or a derivation thereof.
I use it. I like the things that they did with MSN. I like the new search improvements where it can suggest answers and I can ask, you know, who was blah, 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 and I get something out of Encarta. Those things are cool and they have value. But you know, those came out of, here's Google. Google's rocking and rolling all over the place, and we need to get our act together.
Yeah, but MSN, even they, I think, would admit that they're still they're almost further behind than the Internet Explorer team.
They are further behind, you know, than the Internet Explorer team.
So there's something massive fundamentally massive that has to happen before they're just going to, you know, take off. But getting back to the Google thing, mm-hmm. what do you think would happen if, or where do you think Google's going? You know, I have these so many questions that relate to Google and Microsoft. You know, what do you think would happen if Google would release a browser? Where do you think that Google is going within the desktop space?
Just human nature is that more often than not, when a person's back is up against a wall, they will come out fighting. At least those that survive and that are successful are. Microsoft was most successful in the computer industry when they were doing that, when their backs were up against the wall, when they were the underdog and they had to prove themselves. Now they're the king of the pile, and a lot of people say they're turning into IBM. Well, Microsoft is set up in 7 or 8 different business units, and those business units should be able to operate in such a way that they can be scrappy, where they can move, and they can try things that are crazy. I mean, when you move into a behemoth software company, you can't release software as fast. You get more cautious about how you spend your money because you're accountable to a lot of shareholders. Well, there's a fundamental business shift that is taking place that says that people need to be accountable to their customers more than their shareholders, and that if you're accountable to your customers, you will more than please your shareholders. That is a business lesson that is extremely slowly but surely taking over.
It seems that's what Google's figured out.
Google already has that figured out because they didn't have a 20-year corporate mindset that said otherwise. And so they're able to be scrappy, and they're able to try new things with their 80-20 time and those kind of things that allow them to really compete. And I think that, again, Microsoft's back's up against a wall in a way that they haven't had to deal with before across most of their business units. And so they're really having to deal with the result of that. And they're dealing with something that few companies, at least in the tech industry, have had to deal with before. They made a ton of acquisitions. I would argue that most of their software, not most, but a decent part of the software that Microsoft puts out was acquired at one point or another. I mean, Visio, you've got, don't even get me started on the business solutions unit, which is ridiculous, between Xapta and Solimon and whatever the heck else they've bought together to run mid-size enterprises. But they've got all this stuff going on, and they're having to respond to different companies, and they're not making acquisitions nearly as much as they used to. They want to interact with people, and that's great. I think that you're going to start seeing, I want Google to create a browser. I don't want them to create new names for old concepts like Ajax. I'm sure a lot of you have heard of the concept of Ajax with this asynchronous JavaScript and XML, which is nothing more than XML HTTP, which has been around forever, in JavaScript. So just because Google uses it more than Microsoft doesn't mean that it hasn't been around for forever.
And they really haven't been using it. I mean, I think the Maps scenario is pretty much...
Maps, the Google Suggest.
I haven't used Suggest that often.
Yeah. Their Gmail uses it pretty heavily, too.
Oh, yeah, Gmail, of course.
But, you know, Gmail got its underpinnings from Outlook Web Access. Outlook Web Access is a very similar client that interacts with the browser in a very similar way. And Google saw success with Gmail in that approach and delivering a better experience, and they're moving forward with it. And I think that, you know, you're seeing Google is doing the transition between my vision of the way the internet's going to be with applications and what you have right now, in allowing you to interact with a browser without having to deal with page refreshes, without having to deal with those things. And Microsoft invented the technology, and they're just now putting it into their developer tools in any kind of serious way with ASP.NET 2.0. That says a lot for, you know, their direction and how those things are used and come to fruition. It's the people that really push the envelope that are going to force Microsoft to think and act differently. And in this third decade, I mean, you saw the first decade where Microsoft was the scrappy guy that was working on, you know, building an empire. You saw the second decade where they started taking over everything and being really pushy and saying this our way or no way. And now you're seeing, I think, the third decade not only of Windows but of Microsoft where they're saying, okay, how can we help you? And that's something that's been in other service industries for forever, but Microsoft hasn't seen. They touted software as a service, saying we can deliver it as a service to customers, but they don't see it being a service of customers or a service. Building software as a service that Microsoft provides people to make their lives better, and that's something that they're just now getting. And I think that's something that the industry is just now getting, and that's one of the things that you have when you have a young industry. So, and even all across business, that's changing. But I think that it's going to be very interesting, and I hope Google opens the front on competition in a whole lot of areas. And I hope other people see that and see that you can compete against Microsoft and start their own ventures and create a rich ecosystem that was kind of bought up and consolidated. And now you have that space again for growth. And
so do you speculate? Do you think that Google is working on a web browser?
I have absolutely no information that I could be able to make a definitive statement on.
What's your feeling then? Give me your gut.
They're not buying domain names for no reason.
Oh,
they may be protecting.
They're buying domain names.
Well, that's how the speculation took forth because they bought googlebrowser.com and they bought googlevistas.com or something like that. And so they've been with people watch who's been buying up domain names,
wow.
And then they speculate based on the domain names on what Google's going to be doing. So, but the thing is, Google Maps aren't at googlemaps.com. They're at maps.google.com.
Yeah.
So
are they
protecting their brand?
Right. Well, I don't know if it's protection of brand, but, you know, MSN Search would be stupid not to have searchmsn.com or msnsearch.com.
Right. Well, what I'm saying, would you – but at the same time, are you trying to buffer for future ideas? They may not be working on it now.
Well,
or are they working
actually,
on something that goes beyond the browser?
No, there has been documented evidence that when someone was going through their web logs, and I mean web logs, as in the original form, the data,
right.
the information.
Not a blog.
Not a blog, a web log.
Uh-huh.
There was an identifier that had listed like a new Google identifier that
mm-hmm.
could possibly be a browser agent.
Mm-hmm.
That don't know if it's happening.
I'll tell you what, if I were Google, I wouldn't be dumb enough to put a new browser agent in my browser agent string. I'd hide it in an IE string or something like that. I wouldn't be that dumb. Because, like I said, everybody who runs a website uses Webstats. And
mm-hmm.
if you got some employee that's like, hey, I'm going to go try out the Google web browser, and browses to your site and you see, holy crap, what's this Google... you know, browse master or whatever.
See, you know, when that happens, if and when Google releases a web browser, and in my mind, there's no doubt it'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about all the services they currently have, and there's no easy way of getting to them. But hey, if you got you control the browser, you control the user experience. So,
MSN does that too
MSN
Explorer.
But MSN charges for the MSN Explorer.
Well, that's true too. But
and Google's not going to charge for the web browser.
I see Google making some of the same mistakes that Microsoft did early on. And they made the mistake that I made when I was starting to be a component company, and I thought that by being completely different that I would be able to be better. And that's not the case. They did links or whatever that were the same as smart tags.
Auto link, yep.
That they thought they'd be able to get away with that, and they're not going to be able to. People are going to have the same issues that they did with MSN, and they wasted money on doing that because Microsoft already tried it and it didn't work. And it didn't work for very particular reasons in terms of privacy, in terms of link redirection, in terms of who owns your content, in terms of who controls your browsing experience. And it should be the content provider controls what experience you get, not a third party interacting with that experience.
Certainly, and that's why I disagree with the Grease Monkey scripts altogether.
Yeah. Well, and Grease Monkey scripts. There's, oh, there was a great example I was just looking at the other day. You know, that's, so they're taking bad pages out of Microsoft's playbook in certain respects. Is the browser...
But no. But really, truly, I mean, if you really wanted a great way of getting, you know, not only gaining more mind share, you know, I think they're going to use the Windows platform against itself. I mean, they've got Picasa, and I'm telling you, once you use Picasa, you can't use any other photo manager on the planet.
Well, I'll tell you, what.
Not even Microsoft. And here's the thing. Microsoft's still charging for their Digital Image Pro, whatever their suite of apps is. It's a loss leader at this point. Google's ruining it.
I really hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but at the MVP summit, MVPs are allowed to ask the executives questions, and they pick off certain ones and answer them. All the executives take these questions and go and actually research them, and they want to get their MVPs decent answers. One of the questions was, what is your strategy in the picture department? There's 8 different picture editors. Why don't you just have one really great picture editor? His answer to that was, I don't know. I had to look in, and his response scared him. He said, don't quote me on this because I don't know exactly what he said, but he said, we had like 8 different programs and we had no strategy. And so, you know, they said, okay, well, this is on our radar now. We need to have a strategy here.
But they still don't. Their strategy is we sell this product, and Picasa ruined it.
Well, there's other photo editing programs.
No. I'm not talking like a Photoshop. I'm talking a photo manager. I'm talking like, take a look at Picasa. There's no competition.
It's a really nice program.
There is, in my humble opinion, as a software and a power user, there is no other program on the planet that does something half as well as Picasa does. Period.
The integration with Hello is really nice too.
Well, I don't use Hello, and I've got a whole different IM tirade. Mm-hmm. I just think that's a whole bunch of egos too. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't like Hello as an IM platform. I personally don't use it as an IM platform. It is great for a picture sharing platform.
Well, why use Hello when there's Flickr? And that's the one thing that annoys me now, because now Flickr was acquired by Yahoo, so you know the interoperability isn't going to happen.
But I'm not all that familiar with Flickr. Are you allowed to keep stuff private? Or why would I want to go to a website to view something when I can send it to them and have a real-time experience?
Well, because the other person has to have Hello installed, correct?
Well, that's true,
okay,
too.
Okay, bingo. You know, as soon as you increase the level and you raise the bar like that, I'm out. It's just that annoys me. Mm. When it's expected that the other person has to have something installed. Unless, of course, it's so ubiquitous that you know, for instance, IM. You know the user is going to have at least one IM program installed.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Microsoft doesn't have a better photo sharing story in MSN 8, you know, they're missing the boat.
Oh, totally.
Or on MSN Messenger 8.
Yeah. What they're doing is just it's not even close. It's not even coming close to the experiences that I've had elsewhere with other programs. So I think Google's going to compete in they're really going to slap Microsoft in the face in this. Not in a bad way. It's going to spur competition, but mm-hmm. they're going to fight them in their own territory.
Microsoft made some really dumb acquisitions over the course of their history, especially
PowerPoint. Number one, PowerPoint. It's still unusable, and there's been absolutely no. If Microsoft was smart, they'd acquire Mind Manager, which is like a mind mapping tool. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about something that is a fundamentally different way of organizing information, and displaying and presenting information? It's a mind mapper.
And they would answer that as, "We have Visio." That would be their answer to that. I'm going to tell you I hate that answer, but that's going to be their answer.
Well, that's their problem then, because they can't see past the end of their nose.
Right. Well, I mean,
that's their problem. Someone's going to I'm telling you, I'm warning you. If Microsoft doesn't snap them up, Google will.
Hey, you don't warn me.
Mark my words.
Oh, you're
marking
my
words.
Yeah.
You can quote me on that.
Google has made some pretty good acquisitions.
Oh, dude, I didn't understand Keyhole at first, but then when Google Maps rolled out and then the satellite view, I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it now.
Google Maps is awesome. I mean, it's awesome, but it can be used for bad things too. But Google Maps to, you know, be able to see your neighborhood and mm-hmm. to pick out. There's a gee whiz factor in being able to see your house from, you know, 40 miles up or whatever. So, I mean, that it's a great software. It's really well done, and it's integrated very well. I think it's funny. There was a whole big old tirade from somebody, a very popular Microsoft person left Microsoft for Google and complained that Microsoft couldn't ship software. And to a degree, that's true.
No, it's true. It is very true. Their product, their cycles are just way too long.
Well, and,
way too long, dude.
But
for
you
updates,
have to.
No.
But at the same time, you have to deal with there's different types of users, and you want to see updates all the time. Microsoft looks at it from a. But Google's delivering all this software for free. I don't know that they can sustain the Google ship with AdSense for forever. They might be able to, but some of the stuff's going to have to be charged for at some point. I mean, they're going to have to, unless they just go crazy with advertisements on their own site. They're going to have to provide a service that you charge for, and it's not ad-based revenue. So having said that, when you get to that point where you have to charge for something, having services is great, but a lot of people like to have a deliverable in their hands. And so if you're talking about delivering a browser and shipping software in that respect, how do you deal with that in terms of a feature rev? Are you going to pay charge for that at some point? Are you not going to charge for it?
The browser's a loss leader, and I think Microsoft just pretty much made it so. And Opera Software honestly has its head up its ass to think that people are going to be willing to pay for a browser at this point. Firefox pretty much pulled the rug out from underneath them. Mm-hmm. I mean, utterly, entirely. There's no question in my mind. It's not something that you could charge for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Google would, of course, be absolutely silly
to have
ads.
Wasn't that how Microsoft kicked everybody else's butt by saying, okay, here's a browser and we're going to make it free, where you were paying for Netscape and you were paying for all the other ones?
Oh, yeah, certainly.
So, but when you're talking about Google and shipping software, you're going to get to a point where maybe not. I don't know. I see them getting to a point where it's going to make sense for them to put together desktop applications beyond Picasa. You could charge for Picasa and people would pay for it. They don't because they get mindshare and it's free and they can make their revenue from AdSense and that's okay. There's going to come a point where you have to deliver feature revs. And if you're delivering feature revs on an application that you pay for and you don't have a really nice upgrade model, where it's not greedy, people aren't going to buy your new releases, even though you do have better features. I mean, people run into that with XP right now because they consider the cost too high. So you run into a wall in terms of what model works best for you. Personally, I think Microsoft got a tad greedy on some of their products. I think that it's great that they're releasing products free as long as you have a valid copy of Windows. I think that's a smart model, and I think that it will prove good for them in the long term because it will allow them to release applications out of band or release functionality out of band that can enhance your experience and get back to that Google model in terms of delivering applications that are free.
But they're so far out. They're so far out.
They are far out. But again, I'm a pretty positive thinker. I'm hopeful in terms of like all mankind, but specifically with Microsoft, I hope that they can take these lessons that they're learning and apply them. The problem that they have is they're a much bigger ship to turn. They're Titanic running into the iceberg.
Yeah.
They don't turn fast enough.
Or are they just rearranging chairs on the deck of the Titanic?
Right. Well, you know, that's up for pundits like, you know, us to debate for however. But let's hope, you know, people at Microsoft listen to these kind of discussions.
You know, I do believe they're listening. They're listening.
Portions of them are listening.
Right. And that's what there are pockets of people who understand, you know, what's going on. It's like I'll mention a question, like, for instance, to bring it up for the third time in this conversation, the IMs, you know, the various the various services you can use. It's just asinine. And I've talked to people at Yahoo, and I've talked to people at Microsoft, and saying, dude, I'm so frustrated, blah, 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 and just going on and saying this is just stupid. One IM program should be, you know, easily, you know, accessed in another one. It doesn't matter what, you know, compete on client structure. It'd be as stupid as having to use 3 email clients just to get all your email, or
right.
14 web browsers just to view the whole World Wide Web.
Right.
It's just stupid, the fact that IM clients don't interoperate.
Right. Well, and you remember Microsoft or MSN Messenger used to interact with AIM.
Yep.
And then AOL got stupid and closed it
off.
Yep,
and I think they need to kick open those doors again.
Well, see, that was the thing. That was the reason why they were allowed to be AOL Time Warner. That's the reason the government allowed that merger to exist to begin with, because AIM was supposed to open up that protocol for everybody. But now they're trashing the protocol and going with a brand new client. So,
wait, are they trashing the protocol or trashing the client?
Maybe they're keeping the same protocol, but either way, they were supposed to open up that format so that everybody could use them, and they still haven't done that yet. And Time Warner's spinning off the AOL unit again, and that's all BS. So where's the enforcement in that respect? And this was supposed to happen at this time. Why are we as a consumer still dealing with this?
Well, to put a finer point on it, everybody I seem to talk to in positions, when I express these frustrations, they say, yeah, I know, and I agree.
Yeah.
They're not in a position to do anything about it.
Right.
You know, we all have the same problems. We all have the same headaches. We all have the same issues. But it all boils down to like one or two egos that you just can't get past. And that's what creates these brick walls in this industry.
Right.
And what also
happens in other industries too.
Oh,
but this one is the most pervasive in terms of how it affects.
Oh, ubiquitous. I mean, computers are ubiquitous.
Right.
And people use them at least on a regular basis. And there's enough to talk about in terms of innovation and what's new and what's usable. You know, Yellow Pages don't really get innovated. Televisions don't really get innovated. Radios don't usually typically get innovated. Enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
And, the internet is ever evolving. Software is ever evolving. Mm-hmm. You know, operating systems, so on and so forth. So it's a different landscape, especially that it's our communication center in every way.
Right.
You know, it's now replacing landlines with voice over IP. It's, just replacing the phone book in the sense that, you know, you go to the internet for information, not, Ma Bell. It's a different type of industry, even though it's I'm sure just like every other industry with egos.
Right. Well, and then we talked earlier about, the nature of our industry in terms of, who's really running it, who's running tech. For the most part, I mean, granted, I'm not trying to paint everybody with a, huge brush, but for the most part, lots of people are geeks. Lots of people are really. That's not derogatory. They're really passionate about what they do.
Well,
but at the same time, they're not necessarily the best communicators in the world.
Oh, well, a classic example, Bram Cohen, who I believe has Asperger's disease. And no, I'm serious. That's like documented. It's been stated like semi-officially that he does suffer from it.
Mm-hmm.
And, obviously single-handedly created BitTorrent, which has, been a life-changing program for me.
Yeah.
But he controls the industry.
Right.
So as much as Bill Gates controls the industry, in my mind, that's the way I see it. That's how the internet moves.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how small or how big you are. If you do something and it gets traction and it's worth, looking at, you've changed the industry fundamentally.
Well, and I got to tell you, with the announcement that we made yesterday with Google AdSense, it feels kind of cool to be able to be a part of that and to be, that's something that I can say that I did now. And that's, it's a little bit of ego, but at the same time, hopefully my efforts and figuring out and really brainstorming and working with Google to determine what's the best way to monetize your RSS feeds will really change the way that works and will help people who were blogging just for fun actually be able to do it and get paid for it and help further the conversation by giving a really solid business case for businesses to blog. Why is my CEO going to blog or a company CEO going to blog? It's not for mindshare anymore. You want mindshare. You want to get mindshare, but at the same time, you want to make money.
Monetization.
Yeah.
Well, and there are certain things that, and hopefully as the program develops, they'll take the feedback serious. There's certain things that need to happen to, stave away spammers and, people who would use re-scrape certain things and do it in different ways. And hopefully all those issues should and would be taken care of so that it can move from RSS to HTML newsletters and only work with trusted publishers who, have achieved a certain level of trusted, factors. Otherwise, they're, banned. They're blacklisted, basically. And that as long as they're watching those things like a hawk, I feel confident in, seeing how AdSense develops in the RSS space.
Well, like I said, I worked really hard to make sure that this would be done in a way that people would understand. And I can't talk, again, a whole lot about it, but when it does go public into public beta, and I can talk about the process and the story behind what actually happened, I'll be able to relay for people, Google really is listening, and at the same time Microsoft is listening in the same ways, and again they're bigger, so it's slower, but companies do listen to their customers if you prod them enough. And
you should get to the point where you shouldn't have to.
Right. And that's the paradigm shift we're seeing in business as a whole.
Right. And I think that's what the blogosphere does.
Well, and that's what blogging does. And being able to monetize your RSS will make blogging spread like wildfire, because now I can go to a CEO who doesn't know tech, who doesn't understand all this stuff, sit down with an aggregator and say, okay, here's how other people are going to read what you have to say and what the direction you're trying to take your company. At the same time, you can have relevant content ads at the bottom to be able to pay for the cost of not only your time in blogging that, but for your bandwidth and your servers and for all that stuff.
Now, my question comes in terms of, the AdSense model, et cetera, et cetera. Specifically within RSS. I mean, it's so new, but it's so old.
Yeah.
Putting advertising in feeds, and certain people don't like it, but I don't see, honestly, and I know I'm not the only person to say this, I don't see Google AdSense as advertising.
Yeah.
I never have viewed it as advertising.
Right.
I've clicked on Google AdSense links, haven't felt guilty at all.
Yeah. I said on news.com today, it's one thing if you're going to put targeted relevant content in an ad, in an entry, in a way that isn't intrusive. I think AdSense does that very well. It's the whole let's put 80 million ads on a site and click the punch the monkey to win an
classic
iPod
example.
Or whatever.
So, and speaking of, I didn't like the headline that Stephanie decided to use on her article on news.com.
What was that again?
She said something along the lines of Google walks or crawls into blog advertising or blog ads, and RSS is not blogs.
Yeah.
As long as Google makes that distinction and as long as the press makes that distinction, I'm fine, but there is a fundamental difference between blog in RSS.
Well,
they come together.
They work together.
Right. That's like saying calculator and notepad are,
But that's the same thing that happened with WinFS and Search and Longhorn. It's the exact same thing that happened. People equate RSS with blogs. Now, I'm a perfect example of that because on our company site, I'm not even going to plug it because it's pretty much down right now. But on our company site, we had a knowledge base where we stored all of our website content. We pulled that out and syndicated all of that through RSS. So not only could you subscribe to our company site feeds and get all of our site content in terms of products, in terms of features and whatever, into your aggregator, but at the same time, we could also process that RSS onto our web pages and have a completely separate website that displayed that content for you in a different way. RSS is used in so many different ways to be able to get information back and forth. The problem is the only way that most people use it is associated with a blog engine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, RSS has a ton of capabilities and potential, and RSS will evolve into, RSS and Atom, and there's probably going to be another spec, further on down the line that lets you get closer to a full-fledged RDF, tagging system. But at the same time, you do have to fight that perception of how do you communicate this to people who don't have the same level of technical skill that you do. And community enthusiasts like us can, but not everybody can.
Ultimately, I think that that needs to be decided by the operating system and or the browser.
Right.
Because it's nothing more – essentially, it's nothing more than an XML document that is typically interpreted by software, and most people see it on web servers, websites, and so the browser makes you know, it's the best case for an aggregator. That's where it makes the most amount of sense. I don't like the way Firefox does live bookmarks because feeds are way more rich than just headlines.
Yeah.
And it treats – Firefox treats it as if they were just only headlines.
Right.
And if an aggregator treats it as such, then there it's not really a true, in my opinion, aggregator.
Right. Well, I'm going to go on the record right here and make a pretty bold statement. You will see RSS change dramatically with WinFS. You will see RSS change dramatically when you can have a database in your file system. I see a very interesting scenario where I'm going to try to give you a really brief understanding of WinFS. WinFS allows you to define the structure of information as if it were. So you can store like a Word document as a piece of information in a database versus in a file system. And so you can query on it. You can do rich things with that. You can define new file types with an XML schema. You can interact with that.
Yeah, but if I'm not a
programming level,
if I'm not a developer, I'm sunk.
I understand that, but here's where the cool stuff comes in. RSS is already XML. You can define, and the last time I checked, they had already defined an RSS data structure in WinFS. So when you can have an object type of RSS in your database, you can be able to have rich local searching on that. You can have new speech algorithms and new AI algorithms inside Longhorn that I'm pretty sure are still there, and new AI capabilities with better processors, to where you can have your RSS and an aggregator tied in with WinFS to be able to watch your browsing experience and see what feed you're reading, to be able to determine on your machine, not in a way that can be where your privacy is violated, but just in a way that's tracking how you interact with the software and watch what types of things that you read and how often you read them. And then be able to do things like OpML searching and pull out and index other feeds and see whether or not these feeds would be relevant to you, and have a whole slew of feeds that you bring in and store every day, and then have an AI system pop up and say, I think this feed would be valuable to you, or this piece of information is something you'd want to see. That's going to bring RSS to a whole new level in terms of how can I be subscribed to just about everything but only get the content that I want. And that's something that I think is only going to be possible when you have the database and the file system at that kind of level. When the database is ubiquitous on everybody's machine at the OS level, and then you can enable that kind of system. And that's, I talked about it with Scoble at PDC in 2003. I still think it's possible, and I'm really looking forward to somebody actually doing it. So,
like within the WinFS time frame.
Within the WinFS time frame. So, you know, it's 2007, Longhorn's done and out, and WinFS is on, hopefully, Windows XP and Windows Longhorn.
So, let me ask you this, too. Different file system, is it going to be faster or slower than NTFS?
Because
there's a definite speed decrease going from FAT32 to NTFS.
Yeah, well, there was, if anybody saw the WinHEC 2004, the PDC builds, Longhorn was a dinosaur that just dragged on slowly because you had WinFS turned on. The quickest way to pick up the speed in Longhorn was to turn WinFS off. So that was part of the problem of having Indigo and Avalon and WinFS all together and all interdependent on different products that were all in flux. It was way too complicated to try to manage. So after Windows Server 2005 is released and bulletproofed and running and deployed,
Windows
on
Server 2005.
Sorry. SQL Server 2005.
Okay, thank you.
Is released and deployed. Then they can build. They can finish building the WinFS structure on top of that.
Do you think it will be faster or slower?
I think that you're probably going to see a slight performance decrease when you're using WinFS features. But again, WinFS is an add-on to NTFS. So it's only using...
Oh, so it's not a file system.
It is a... It's a file system extension.
Okay.
So you're still going to use NTFS for your security model and
right.
all that. But what this does is NTFS lets you have a ton of metadata
right.
for the file. And WinFS is going to move that metadata into a structure that's searchable, and it will allow you to extend – it again allows you to extend the schema to be able to support documents, document types that don't necessarily exist as files on the hard drive. So a Word document has WordML or a Word XML markup language.
Yeah, which is just bloated as hell.
Right. But at the same time, you could take that WordML schema and put it in WinFS and store your document as a WinFS document. It doesn't necessarily live in Windows NT in a specific folder, in a specific file on your system, but it exists in the relational database in a way that you can relate to other files or other people or other programs and call up whenever you
want.
Gosh,
I hope there's no hard drive failure, because you know, a file in a folder, it's sitting in a specific place, I can easily grab it if something goes wrong, but if it's sitting in a database somewhere,
right,
how easy is that going to be to extract should a hardware failure occur? And it will happen.
Right. Well, I mean I haven't seen anything serious about WinFS since PDC. I would like to think that they're looking at those scenarios and seeing.
Oh, I'd like to hope.
Not only in the server space, but in terms of, you know, backup,
certainly.
In terms of having a file-based storage for this is your oh crap folder, and if something ever goes wrong, you can still pull your files out of here. With storage being so, you know, my sister just picked up like a 200 gigabyte hard drive for $70 or something.
For nothing.
Like that.
Yeah.
With storage being so easy to get a hold of. Those things shouldn't be an issue. But again, it's how do you evolve the hardware beyond the current paradigm? Slapping a gigabyte SD card in between the hard drive buffer seems like a no-brainer, but we're only just seeing that now.
What do you mean?
Well, increasing the hard drive buffer seems like a no-brainer. I mean, you have an 8-meg cache. Ooh, that's going to get you really far in terms of read-write. If I have a gigabyte of solid-state memory between my hard drive and my buffer, I'm not having to read so much. I can write to the hard drive and burst and be done. Think of your performance increases that way when, instead of writing to the hard drive, I'm writing to a different kind of... It's almost a different kind of RAM, a different kind of memory
certainly.
Buffer. So,
wait, no, Hitachi's working on that, you said?
Hitachi has a demo. If you haven't seen it yet and you're in Seattle and you're at WinHack, go to the Windows History Pavilion or the Windows Hardware Pavilion or something like that. They have their history of Windows and the Microsoft RAM disks or whatever. And then you go back in there and you'll actually see a prototype of the Hitachi NISD or I don't something like that. It's a drive, and it's got a, like I said, it's got some kind of memory in front of it that stays active. Or the
how can, far out is that?
2006.
Oh, really? So is it Longhorn?
It's not Longhorn specific, but you're going to see it
right,
shipping in
like,
laptops in early 2006.
Okay, so is it primarily a laptop thing, or is it
well,
to laptop the
desktop? Laptops fail, hard drives fail more than desktop
certainly,
hard drives
cause of,
fail.
Certainly, because of more motion.
Right, and so if you can decrease, well, and battery life too has an effect on that as well. So there's a lot of reason initially to put it in notebooks, but you're going to see it in the desktop too.
You mean around the same time frame, or are we going to have? I mean, ideally, it'd be wonderful to have all these things in the machine, like right when Longhorn rolls out. I mean, imagine having a gigabyte buffer in a hard drive, you know, to, you know, make those performance increases even more dramatic.
Right. Well, the one thing that Microsoft is, one of the reasons they do WinHack is so that they can prep hardware people for Longhorn, and the logo program that they're working on right now is a marketing campaign around letting people know that Longhorn is coming and letting them know that their current PCs will support Longhorn and that they will get a great experience on Longhorn with the stuff that they're buying now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working on a whole marketing program and sticker program around that. So are you going to see that before Longhorn? I'm pretty sure yes. I mean, again, I'm not a hardware guy. I don't know everything.
I'll be interested in looking at that space, just because the hard drives seem to be the biggest bottlenecks anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think your biggest bottleneck is on the motherboard in several ways.
Your
hard drive, your I/O, all over the place.
Well, now you allegedly PCI Express kind of alleviates some of those issues,
mm-hmm.
And then a Super ATA.
Mm-hmm.
All these newer types of technologies. So I can only imagine, increasing the hard drive speed and helping.
Well, and having, SATA drives are really, really fast. And you're going to see, new paradigms beyond that. I mean, I think that the tech industry is good and bad. I think that echo chamber that you get within companies goes beyond companies, too. I think that too many people look at, the form factors and the way computers are designed and don't think outside the box and don't try to put it together in new ways that might actually be interesting.
That's
Athens PC was amazing. I really hope HP builds that computer because I'd buy it the day it came out.
What's that?
Do you see the Athens PC at WinHEC?
WinHEC
2003. Well, they covered it on news.com and stuff like that. WinHEC 2003 showed off Athens, which was a really slick Longhorn-based computer that had a Bluetooth. It had a phone on it. It had a keyboard that with the screen had a dock for the keyboard, and the keyboard was wireless, but it charged using the same induction charging as an electric toothbrush. Mm. It had indicator lights on the screen to be able to show when you had phone calls and things like that, and it had a unified messaging client that lets you search for communication with people not only through phone calls but in your email and your IMs and things like that. It is a really slick PC design where the box, there was only one cable between your hard drive or between the CPU and the screen. Your power, everything came through that one cable. And then you had a ton of USB connections on the monitor base itself, and it had built-in Bluetooth and built-in Wi-Fi and the whole nine. It was a great concept PC. And that's the kind of outside-of-the-box thinking that Microsoft pushes hardware developers to do, but then they never go with it.
Yeah, you never see it. And I have to say, startsomethingpc.com, just launched the other day, and that is something I'd like to. I've subscribed to the RSS feed. I'm going to keep my eye on that, because it seems that if they're going to empower designers, I want to see not only the designs happen, but I want to see those proofs of concept actually become concepts.
Well, I think I'm not completely familiar with that whole deal yet. I think that they should, if they haven't set up, they should set up so where people can build concepts, where they not necessarily buy the hardware and build it, but they can design a concept.
Yes, that's what they're doing.
And will they pay for the concept to be prototyped so that
build it on their own, and then I think
but do they have to
prizes.
Build the hardware, or do they can they design it in the computer and submit it?
Ooh, I don't know if it's a hardware-based thing or if it's an aesthetic. I don't know. I didn't look extensively, and they just just launched the site
on Monday.
Pretty much at the same time that WinHEC went forward. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a silent launch. I didn't hear much buzz about it.
Scoma linked to it, a couple other people, and then they had that whole video. I was pretty disappointed. I thought it was going to be more of an... I mean, they have their ad campaign, but it's like one ad and one video, and it's the same one thing that they did with the tablet PC.
Yeah, it's not that compelling.
Yeah.
It's really not that exciting. I mean, you have to capture people's attention in more ways than one.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said before, Microsoft really goes for the enterprise, and that's going to bite them in the ass.
Yeah.
It's biting them in the ass now.
I got to tell you, one of the best PC concepts I saw that was actually doable was at phonescoop.com. If you go there, you look at their articles and scroll all the way down to the bottom, it's Motorola's Frog Designs wearable PC concept, where it was all personal area network, Bluetooth enabled. You had a pocket PC-esque wristwatch that ran the smartphone operating system, but it used a Bluetooth earbud. It had a Bluetooth camera that you could wear. It had a pair of glasses that had the screen in front of you where you could have I think it was a 1024 by 786 screen in a really cool looking, not geeky and big and clunky, but actually usable design. I think that there are there's more than just the tablet PC form factor. There's more than just the pocket PC form factor.
Yeah, but as soon as you, even when you start talking about things that are out of the box, then you're talking to things that are out of the wallet. I mean, those things get pricey real quick.
Right. I think you're going to see that change when people are looking at not being... People don't want to be tied to their desktop now, but I mean, that concept is evolving to the point where you should be able to take higher-powered devices with you and not be tied to that huge... You don't need your Dell box over there to be that huge. Your Dell box could be, you know, this big and be done with it. I saw they had a... Over in that Windows Hardware thing, they had a computer that was inside a Kenner Death Star action, or
nice.
Or not Death? No, it was the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, really?
Setup.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty slick. They covered it on news.com a couple months ago. I mean, there's cool new things that you can do with a computer. I saw some things they're doing with secondary displays that were really nifty.
Like what?
Because I've
got one.
You've got one.
A secondary display.
No, I mean secondary displays on the cover of a laptop.
Oh,
so where
okay.
you could have a navigation D-pad and be able to click through and see your email and play music files and stuff like that without necessarily having to have your computer on. They had a great secondary display model that used Longhorn as a file server. So where it didn't have a head, but you had a little screen and you had a navigational structure where you could see the status of your hard drives and when you needed to replace them and that kind of thing. I see really interesting concepts for... I haven't seen it, but I'm saying there's the possibility for a concept where you put a secondary display next to your alarm keypad on your way out the door. So before you leave, you could push the D-pad buttons and check and see if you have any new email messages and see your schedule or whatever. There's possibility in that space, and that's going to be, you know, mini embedded Longhorn on chips and stuff like that. So there's potential for a lot of things in terms of what's a different form factor? How am I going to interact with technology and store files better and take pictures better and connect cameras better? And I don't know why they don't have, I mean, at least I haven't seen them, a Bluetooth HP camera where you can just sync with it without having to dock anything.
I think there is a Wi-Fi enabled camera, although why it's not like 802.11g, but there's like an attachment you can attach onto a camera and make it Wi-Fi.
Well, Bluetooth antennas are so small, and they really have some really low power antennas now that I don't see why they couldn't put that in a camera and let me be able to sync with my pocket PC or my. I had the worst time ever.
Bluetooth at this point it just sucks.
Slow. But when you get wireless USB, hopefully it'll get a little bit better.
Well, it still sucks, and the software is even worse.
Yeah. But I had the worst time. I was trying to take videos. I had the HP 707 camera. It's a great camera. You could take pretty decent videos on it. I was trying to get my videos off the camera and onto my computer, and I'm having to stop taking pictures and transfer them over to USB. Why can't it go directly into my laptop? Why can't I have an experience where I move equipment from one room to another without having to deal with cables and wires and without having to deal with configuration issues and where I'm at? That's really where we're going. I think Start Something PC is going to help out with at least the aesthetic design, because there's a decent factor to these Dell boxes you got over here, but at the same time, that's an eyesore. I don't want to put that in my living room. And I saw some cool media center PC form factors that, you know, I would put in my living room. They need to get to the point where you can put them anywhere and it fits in with decor. Apple does a phenomenal job with that. Nobody else does. It's if you want a great looking PC, you go to Apple. If you want a PC that you can, if you want a computer that lots of other people are going to use, you go with the ugly black or silver or blue case Dells or whatever.
Oh, I won't touch Dell laptops. Desktops I don't mind as much because they're built with a little more.
What kind of laptop would you go with?
IBM ThinkPad.
Oh, okay.
No argument. I mean, I've got my first IBM ThinkPad, and I have no reason to. Well, the only thing I hate about IBM ThinkPads is there's no Windows key, and I use the Windows key so often.
Yeah.
The way they've got the keys laid out, that it is kind of annoying, and there's like I have to be cognizant when I'm like on that keyboard that I have to watch my keystrokes and how I do things. That's the one thing that they've made a colossal error. Fundamental error.
I think their little ThinkPads are really cool. I want to see a ThinkPad tablet.
Well, I've seen screenshots.
Yeah.
I think, jkontherun.com has got some screenshots that were filed with the Patent Office. I think it was the Patent Office. Some registration database, and I caught the pictures, and it seemed to be like a ThinkPad, only it was a tablet. And, you know, that would be the one thing I'm looking for: small, thin, as much as humanly possible.
Yeah.
Not slate. I need something that's I can carry around with me.
You're waiting for ultra mobile 2007,
pretty much. And that's and until then, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I know today they had some interesting, you're talking about not seeing much in the terms of UI enhancements. They demoed a Longhorn tablet that was, had a touchscreen, and that you could interact with it, and had a really interesting paradigm around how do you right click and how do you left click when you're touching a screen and interacting with it that way. And I thought that there's going to be some serious improvements over the next few generations of tablet PCs in terms of, I don't need a pen anymore. How can I interact with it with my fingers? I love that experience with the Pocket PC.
Yeah.
And being able to touch buttons and whatever and interact with it. I think that you're going to start seeing new input paradigms in terms of, I think there may be potential with the flexible displays and some of the tactile displays that they're coming up with to have a software keyboard that you can actually interact with in a meaningful way. I know that Arizona State...
I don't know
State,
how much that would annoy me, but...
I don't know how much it would annoy me either, but I think there's potential there. I think that there's... ASU is was given a contract for $40 million from the government to develop wearable displays that are flexible glass. It's glass, but it's flexible that you can sew into... Army or BDUs to be able to get GPS navigation information and orders from your commanders and that kind of thing. And I think that in that space you may be seeing some interesting displays in terms of having a little panel in your sleeve that is your portable media center screen or something like that. I think that you're really going to see people start thinking outside of the box in terms of how are we dealing with these devices. Okio's an interesting concept. Terrible execution, I think.
OQO. Yeah.
I think it's terrible execution. It's too thick. The screen's too small to run Windows XP, and there's no way in hell I'd ever be able to use Word on that thing. But I think that people are with those kind of concepts are heading in the right direction. And like I said, I'm really excited about what we're going to see. I think that for some people, the Longhorn UI stuff is disappointing. The fact that they couldn't do as much as they wanted to and they got people excited about it and now they can't do it, that's all disappointing. But at the same time, there's so many other really exciting things going on in terms of, like we said, Google is doing some great stuff. There's other software, quieter software vendors that are out there innovating. And what happens after the bubble burst, everything was great in the dot-com bubble because people could get money and no innovation happened.
Yeah.
Innovation happens in the times after those bubbles because you have fewer resources to work with. And so we're seeing the fruition of some of that now. We're seeing, some of the next great companies that are going to come in and actually make money and do important things, and I'm really looking forward to that.
The Windows Media Stream for the live broadcast of the Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.